Breaking news, the U.S. hitting more than 85 targets in the Middle East. Following through on the promise to retaliate after a drone attack killed three American soldiers. Where the airstrikes are and why they could last for weeks.
Then, video you will only see on WRAL. What led up to this heated moment between a local man and a school bus driver that left a parent facing charges?
We're basking in this warm weather. I'm tracking a cold front that will knock temperatures back to normal. How your weekend will be impacted.
Breaking tonight, the U.S. has launched retaliatory airstrikes in Iraq and Syria. More than 85 targets have been hit so far. The air assaults come after a drone strike on an American base in Jordan killed three U.S. service members. Mark Boyle is in the WRAL Live Center following this story. Mark, for days, President Joe Biden has been warning that America would respond forcefully.
He promised he would do it, and today kept those promises right around 4 o'clock this afternoon, Ashley. This is the headline coming out of CENTCOM tonight. U.S. strikes more than 85 targets in Iraq and Syria. An initial barrage of retaliatory attacks indicating more to come over the next several days and weeks. On your screen, here are some of the video and the latest information as we come on the air here at 7 o'clock. The U.S. has attributed the attack to Iranian-backed militant groups. The president and first lady, Jill Biden, attended the dignified transfer of the three soldiers earlier today. Here's some video of that. Also, the president issued a statement from the White House confirming that the military's response began at 4 o'clock this afternoon and noted the U.S. does not seek any more conflict in the Middle East or anywhere else in the world. However, he warned that harming Americans will result in a response. We'll keep you up to date as soon as we have more information. If there is any more released tonight, we'll have that for you right here in the Live Center. Back to you.
Do keep us updated, Mark. Thank you. The special school board meeting in Durham is stretching into its fourth hour. School board members are looking at pay options for classified staff. Protests have thrown the district into chaos for the last few weeks. WRAL's Monica Casey has been in that meeting. Monica, where do things stand now?
Well, this discussion has been complicated and lengthy. More than 100 DPS employees are still inside here waiting for a decision. Public comment wrapped up a little more than an hour ago, and the board has been in talks, tense at times, since. They are considering two options on the table. The first is to stick with the original plan from January. That keeps the results of the salary study. It gives all staff at least a 4% raise, but does not give credit for out-of-state or private practice experience in pay. The second option includes an 11% raise, and it would restore last year's salary steps, including that out-of-district experience. Many people here are not happy with either one.
After 3 weeks of protest, you are proposing that absolutely nothing will change about removal of steps. The second option tosses into the garbage a costly years in the making salary study and does nothing to combat wage compression, address cost of living concerns, or make DPS more competitive.
You are asking us and these people who have put their blood into their jobs for our children to accept a budget that you successfully came up with in a week and a half while the house is on fire, but couldn't come up with the budget during normal times. How do we trust that this math works? How do we trust that the nonsense you just shared in two slides is something that we can move forward with and protect this district?
Questions of accountability and transparency are coming up here tonight as some members question when people knew about the issues with the pay discrepancy and who knew about them. One board member mentioned as the investigation into this issue has progressed, more concerns have come to light. Now, if that sounds vague, it's because this investigation is still ongoing and the board attorney says the results of it will be available soon. That was the only timeline he would give. As for tonight's vote here about salary, we are still waiting. Ashley?
All right, Monica, and I know you will keep us posted as that develops. Thank you for your reporting. You know, it was 3 weeks ago today that some Durham school employees received a message that their pay was changing. tonight as the school board meets to decide how to address the situation. WRAL anchor Chris Lovingood is showing us a real-world example, Chris, how all these changes could affect an individual employee.
Well, I mean, pick one. I mean, Ashley, steps, salary studies, credit for outside experience. What's happening in DPS is a very complicated issue. There are so many details with this that it can be confusing. So allow me to walk you through this and explain how this could and has affected one employee. So here's a physical therapist. Let's call her Brenda. That's my mom's name. Brenda's worked at a private facility for 30 years and worked in a year-round Durham public school facility for 2 years. In the 2022-23 school year, she was making a little more than 93 grand. This school year, before the adjustments came down 3 weeks ago, she was earning a little more than 112,000. That is a very big raise. And she got that raise because Durham conducted a salary study and made adjustments starting in July for this school year. Now, those adjustments meant that, well, they're paying out a lot more money than they already were. And the district says people were overpaid, but staff say they were given the amount of money that salary study indicated they should get. Again, very complicated issue and not 100% clear when it comes to that point. But we have to talk about the two options on the table tonight. Let's go back to our physical therapist, Brenda. Under plan one, Brenda would no longer get credit for her 30 plus years of experience, only for those 2 years with DPS. With a 4% raise on top of that, she'd end up making a little more than $78,000. Folks, that is a 30% drop from her current salary. However, and this is key, the board has stated no one will take a pay cut, so that employee will be back at that 93,000 number, plus at least a 4% raise. Now, under plan two, Brenda would keep the credit for her private sector experience, but lose the additional money added to her pay from the salary study. So she goes back to her 2022-23 salary, then gets an 11% raise on top of that. And that brings her to nearly $104,000 annually. That's 8% less than she was making before all those changes, but way better off than under option number one. And some school employees tell us that while plan two works well for someone at this experience and income level, it means much less money for others with fewer years of experience. Again, a lot of information that Monica and myself just covered. That is why we have this broken down for you on WREL.com.
A seriously consequential decision tonight. Chris, thanks. It has happened again in Cumberland County. A parent boards a school bus with children and has a heated exchange with the driver. The incident was caught on the bus security camera. WRAL Fayetteville reporter Gilbert Bays has the video you'll only see on WRAL.
Well, this may not seem like a serious offense, but Sheriff Ennis Wright says it is. It is against the law for anyone except for students and school personnel to be on a school bus. Well, this morning it happened again. A parent climbed on board a school bus, and now he faces some serious charges.
It happened this morning on a bus taking children to Warrenwood Elementary School in Fayetteville. A disgruntled parent was upset because his son got off the school bus Thursday crying. You can see 25-year-old Rayshawn Whitfield trying to give his phone number to the bus driver so he could be called if his child is involved in an incident on the bus.
Whitfield, that boy right there, that's my son.
Oh, okay.
My wife was asking about him being hit yesterday.
But then the conversation gets heated and Whitfield boards the bus.
Sir, do you know I can call the police?
I don't give a about that. This is what I'm telling you.
Trespassing. You're not supposed to get on the bus. And we have it all the time, but this was really the worst one, where the gentleman got on the bus and he used profanity.
Several of the children, including his own, were clearly upset and scared. One child got up, moved to the back, and hid behind another seat as Whitfield's exchange with the driver became even more heated. He eventually backed down and got off the bus. This is the second time this week a parent has been charged with trespassing on a school bus. 51-year-old Bobby Keel was arrested Monday for getting on a bus at John Griffin Middle School. The sheriff thought posting mugshots of violators would send a message.
Is it having any impact in terms of stopping parents from getting on buses?
We thought that it was, but it's looking like that it's not. And the sheriff constantly puts out that do not get on the bus.
So now the parent faces charges, will have to go to court and maybe get an attorney. All of this could have been avoided had he just taken his complaint to the school's principal. In Fayetteville, Gilbert Bays, WREL News.
Whitfield was wanted in Wake and Wayne County for a failing to appear in court, and because of that, he's being held without bond in the Cumberland County Detention Center. You are looking live at RDU, where a new flight to Akron, Ohio took off today. Breeze Airways launched new nonstop service with fares starting around $68 one way. The new route is one of a number of new direct flights announced by Breeze from RDU over the past few months. This spring, nonstop service starts to San Diego, Westchester County, Syracuse, Burlington, and Portland, Maine. President Joe Biden this week is touting a fresh endorsement from the United Auto Workers Union. And in a speech to union members, he claimed that automakers lost tens of thousands of jobs under former President Donald Trump. Paul Spey checks that claim for PolitiFact.
How many auto jobs has the U.S. gained under President Biden? Well, check out what he said the other day in a speech.
Tens of thousands of auto jobs were lost nationwide during Trump's presidency. During my presidency, we've opened 20 auto factories and more to come. We've created more than 250,000 auto jobs all across America.
Is that right? Well, did you hear Biden mention factories just then? That's because he was speaking to the UAW union, which represents workers in the auto manufacturing industry. But when we looked at manufacturing jobs under Trump and Biden, the numbers came up short of what Biden said. Manufacturing jobs, they did decline under Trump, but not by tens of thousands, by 8,000. When we asked the White House about this, they said Biden's number also included jobs lost by dealerships, auto and auto part dealerships. And you can see those specific numbers here. So if we add up dealership jobs and manufacturing jobs, well, those do align more with what Biden said. Tens of thousands were lost under Trump, while more than a quarter million were created under Biden. But Biden didn't mention that he lumped two categories together while speaking to those manufacturing workers. He also didn't mention that Trump's losses mostly came during the pandemic. So that's why the Truth Meter rates his claim only half true. Read the full fact check at WREL.com.
And you know, our PolitiFact team checks comments by Republicans, Democrats, and officials at every level of government. You can find the latest fact checks under the PolitiFact section on our homepage. The Super Bowl is almost 1 week away now, and many Chiefs and 49ers fans right here in the Triangle are gearing up for game day. And one former Carolina Panther is taking to the big stage this year, fighting for that Super Bowl ring. A look at San Francisco 49ers Christian McCaffrey's history in our state and how it dates beyond his years on the field. And Battle of the Blues Round 1 is tomorrow in Chapel Hill. The four things you need to know before watching one of the most well-known rivalries face off. Kat?
It was beautiful outside today. We're not going to see a repeat of this warm weather because a cold front passed. I'll let you know how low the temperatures will go coming up.
This year's Super Bowl is a heavyweight matchup. The Kansas City Chiefs and the San Francisco 49ers. They played each other 4 years ago. And even if you're not excited about a rematch, rest assured, the most rabid of fans are ready to go.
It's kind of a he said, she said type of household.
It's constant craziness.
Debbie, a huge Chiefs fan.
Really became a rabid fan.
Marcella was all about the Niners.
The five Super Bowls.
Whatever.
Both displaying their fandom randomly in the basement till one day.
I decide, well, this is when I change.
Marcella drew a line and split the basement, one half his, one half hers.
He did it on his own. I was at work.
And that's when Debbie knew this rivalry just stepped it up a notch.
And from that point on, it was game on.
Okay, that couple lives in a town outside of Kansas City. You can kind of get their fandom, but maybe you aren't a fan of either team, or maybe you're not a fan of football at all. Maybe you're more into whatever this is.
Let's go, Kevin. Get your spear.
I just feel like she doesn't take me seriously.
I don't say that.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Can we help you?
I have a delivery for Athena.
You know any Athena?
I don't know any Athena.
Twist on it?
Yeah. Cream on the right, we let him in.
Oh, welcome to Troy. Open
the gate. The famous Super Bowl commercials. Whatever happened to waiting to see the ads during the actual game, right? Nowadays, they're on the internet days, maybe weeks in advance. Kind of takes the fun out of it, I think. I digress. You might tune in for the ads, you might tune in for the game, or you might be tuning in for Usher's halftime show. Tonight, I want to tell you about something else that's worth tuning in for. One of the players has a special connection to the Triangle. You know him. You love him. Christian McCaffrey. Yes, he has played for the Carolina Panthers, and yes, we were all heartbroken when the team traded him. But there's more than one reason to root for him as a Niner. You see, his connection to North Carolina goes way back. It's pretty well known that McCaffrey's father, Ed, played in the NFL. He played for Denver, New York, and San Francisco. You might not have known about Ed's brother, Billy. Billy McCaffrey was all about basketball. He played for Duke in 1991, even scoring 16 points in the title game win over Kansas. He then transferred to Vanderbilt, where he was inducted into their Athletics Hall of Fame. But probably the most talented athlete in McCaffrey's family isn't a McCaffrey at all. You have to go to his mom's side for that. CMC's grandfather was Dave Sim. He was a track star at Duke. He won the silver medal in the 100-meter dash in the 1960 Olympic Games. At the time, many considered him the fastest man in the world. But he didn't stop there. He was a wide receiver for the Duke football team. He battled 376 for Duke's base, batted 376 for Duke's baseball team. And after all that, he became an ophthalmologist, which is a technical word for an eye doctor. Sim passed away in 2016. His legend lives on in the North Carolina Sports Hall of Fame and in his grandson, of course. So when you watch the big game next weekend, it's not just a former Carolina Panther you can root for, but a whole family history with deep connections here. We are on the eve of the first game of the season in what is one of the most well-known rivalries in college sports. Of course, Battle of the Blues Round 1 is tomorrow in Chapel Hill. It's a live look at Franklin Street from Top of the Hill Restaurant, where it's all quiet now, but that'll change quickly if the Heels win tomorrow night. They're looking for revenge after Duke took both games last year. Some things to know, tip-off is at 6:30. The pregame fanfare will start much earlier than that with ESPN's College Game Day in town for the rivalry. You can expect crowds outside the Dean Smith Center by 7:30, maybe earlier, 7:30 a.m. Several downtown streets will have closures or parking restrictions to help accommodate the crowds tomorrow. WREL will have team coverage to prepare you for the big game. UNC looking for revenge after Duke won both meetups last year. Look for live team coverage tomorrow at 6 o'clock before tip-off at 6:30. And then be sure to tune into WREL News Plus as soon as the game ends for your Battle of the Blues post-game coverage with live reports from our crews in Durham and Chapel Hill. You can find WREL News Plus on Channel 34 over the air, Spectrum 1257, or the WREL app. For all those folks heading down to the game tomorrow, meteorologist Kat Campbell, can you give us a glimpse of what it's going to be like?
You need to bring a jacket with you. You're going to need it as you are leaving tomorrow night. I think a lot of people are going to be out and about celebrating too, so you'll want the jacket if you are celebrating a win. 6 o'clock toward when the game starts, when you're headed in, temperatures are going to be in the mid-40s. As you're leaving, in the mid to upper 30s. The sweatshirt or the jacket will be appreciated tomorrow. 54 is the high. So it's going to be more than 10 degrees cooler than it was today. 57 on Sunday, partly cloudy skies in the forecast for Sunday. And those are going to be thin upper level clouds, so we're not expecting that to be a big deal for us. But as you wake up tomorrow morning, temperatures are going to be in the mid 30s. Lunchtime, we're at 49, and then dinner time tomorrow evening, temperatures are in the mid 40s again. So make sure you've got the jackets tomorrow. 30 degrees will be the low by Sunday morning. Some of us are going to wake up to temperatures in the upper 20s Sunday morning. After a chilly start in the morning, it ends up being a really nice day if you are headed out for Astronomy Days at the NC Natural Sciences Museum. It should be great weather out there for that, so be sure to check it out. Always a good time. In White Lake, a live look at the Grand Regal here. We had a beautiful sunset earlier. It's a nice night. Temperatures are sitting in the mid-50s with a north wind around 7 miles per hour. That north wind kicking in behind the cold front that passed today. It takes a little time for the cooler air to push in behind the cold front. That's why we were still able to warm up to 67 degrees for the high today in the Triangle. But we are cooling off tonight, and that's why we'll see highs in the 50s for the weekend instead of those 60s like we had today. Here's the next system that we are watching. We expect it to pass south of us here in North Carolina. That system is going to stay closer to Georgia, South Carolina. We just see some of the upper level clouds clouds as it swings by Sunday into Monday. But for us, over the next 7 days, we have no rain in the forecast, really. Just a 20% chance of rain as we get into the end of next week toward Friday and perhaps next weekend. I will say the wet weather is shifting out west. There is likely to be some really significant rainfall in parts of California over the next 7 days, leading to a pretty significant flooding threat. So heads up, that's the next weather story that you'll be hearing a lot about. We've had a lot of wet weather around here lately with the El Nino winter, so it is kind of nice to see a break from the rain. As of right now, we're sitting at the third wettest winter to date on record. High temperatures a bit closer to normal for this time of year. We're in the 50s for highs through Wednesday, but by the end of next week, we should be back in the 60s. Next Friday, we could have another, 60-degree winter Friday. No complaints.
What a beautiful forecast. Thanks. Mm-hmm. 2 years ago, a Raleigh baby was born on a unique and memorable birthday. February 2nd, 2022. 2-2-2022. We catch up with his parents ahead. This cutie, Amari Taylor, is a fan of the number two. He was born in Raleigh on February 2nd, 2022. At 2:22 p.m. I know, it's incredible. Today, this sweet little boy is turning two. Amari has had a year of firsts. He began walking at 10 or 11 months, ready to keep up with his big sisters. Amari's first word was dada, and he loves to sing, especially Twinkle Twinkle Little Star. His mom and dad have also been busy. Both started their own businesses to help others while working full-time jobs.
Be able to leave them a legacy and also to just make a difference with positivity, because that's what I want for my children. I want them to contribute in a positive way to the world and to their community.
Big sister doing what big sisters do, right? A girl mom for years, Taylor said she always dreamed of having a son, even putting a baby boy on her vision board. A few months later, she was pregnant with Amari. Happy birthday, Amari. Thanks for joining us here tonight. We'll see you again at 10 on Fox 50 and 11 on WRAL.
Keep watching WRAL News over the air, Channel 34 and Spectrum Channel 1257.